Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
Jason, great to be together with you today on this podcast.
Merle, it is my pleasure, my friend. Looking forward to working with you.
And the guest that we have today, Allison, she brings a wealth of experiences that can be a big help to everyone that listens.
She does bring a wealth of experiences that can be helpful. You nailed it, to everybody who listens, whether entry level, safety and health, or all the way up to senior leader. Some of those experiences briefly: Marine Corps, EPA, Tetra Tech, Alcoa, Pentair, L3Harris, WestRock, Applied Materials, world-class organizations, where she's currently vice president of EHS for Applied Materials.
And yet, at all those places, she had to face some challenges. And that's what we're going to hear about today, how she faced them, and give us some encouragement of how we can face our challenges.
Allison, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
We are doing well. Thank you for joining us today. Before we get too far along, can you tell us who you are, where you're dialing in from, and then how you got into safety and health?
Sure. So Allison Montgomery, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I currently lead EHS. I'm the vice president at Applied Materials, and EHS has a very broad definition for us at Applied Materials. So EHS includes what we would think of traditional EHS, but I also have product safety, business continuity planning, and emergency response. So a very exciting role that's relatively new for me. I'm just about a little less than a year in, so still learning. But the company's been great, and I'm so excited to share more about not only the work that I've done at Applied Materials, but of course work in the past as well.
Fantastic. And tell us, if you could, how did you get started in safety and health in EHS?
You know, I'm originally from Austin, Texas, ended up joining the military straight out of high school. I graduated about a year early from high school and went into the Marine Corps. I'm a bit of a aggressive risk taker, so I picked the branch of the service that I thought would be a great challenge. And of course, the Marine Corps was an excellent challenge for that. So I served active duty 4 years, had a great experience, was able to live overseas. I lived in Hawaii for a few years. And so during that time, I really started to think about, what do I want to study? You know, I'm very interested in science, and I really love animals. As you can tell, I have this great picture behind me. And I thought, I'm going to be a vet. I'm going to be a veterinarian. I love animals. I want to help animals. I watched Animal Planet like a champ. I knew I could do everything that they showed. And so that's what I set out to do. So after the Marine Corps, I went to the Ohio State University and started studying basically biological sciences, animal sciences there to prepare for vet school. They have an excellent veterinary program. And during my studies, I, of course, did an internship at a vet clinic. And it was not like Animal Planet. I learned very quickly that there is a lot of very difficult things that vets do, right? Not only do you have the luxury, I would say, of like loving on animals, which is great, but there's a lot of sick animals. You know, surgeries were really fantastic and interesting, but then there was this whole side that was really emotionally difficult. Animals dying. And I was like, oh no, I'm not sure that this is going to work for me, right? I guess I thought I was going to save everything all the time, and that wasn't true. And so I now had this awesome degree full of all these hard classes to go to vet school, and didn't really think that was the right choice for me. And so kind of as I'm thinking, what am I going to do now? I read about this great program at the University of Maryland, and they offered something in kind of the environmental sciences area, and also that had some concentration in environmental regulations like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. And I was like, that's kind of cool. So I actually ended up moving over to the DC area. I was working at the EPA and ended up taking these classes through the university system and really started to get into the environmental side of EHS. I found that very interesting. You know, the laws, the regulations, the complexity of whether it's control equipment or other systems. And so with that, I worked through that master's degree program and actually ended up moving back to Austin, Texas, and getting a job as a consultant. And I was doing environmental consulting for a major engineering consulting firm. And that was where I was introduced to this EHS concept. I actually had some great clients that I worked for. One of them was Alcoa. And Alcoa was, you know, major metals manufacturer, aluminum specifically. And I started doing environmental work for Alcoa. And when I did that, I started to learn the little bit about EHS, right? Picking up safety, picking up health at the same time. And so Alcoa really, I think a little bit by accident, was my introduction to EHS. And I loved it. You know, I thought the environmental side was great and awesome. And I didn't do the safety side right away. That came a little bit later for me, but that's a little bit how I got started. I think, you know, when I went to school, there wasn't as many degree programs that there are now around safety or occupational health and safety. So I, you know, studied more traditional and kind of fell into that by accident.
It's a very diverse background. You know, it reminds me that sometimes when people are pursuing and trying to find their trajectory and career path, just multiple different options, scenarios, taking action, like you said, and trying different things, and then realizing that you sometimes don't find the thing until you try multiple different things that you realize were not the thing.
That's right.
Which eventually leads you to the thing, which it seems like you've obviously found your niche in your thing. Merle, did you have something?
Yes. You know, Allison, when we did a pre-call with you, one of the statements that you made was, as you got into safety, you used the term that you felt like you were a bit naive. And mm-hmm. I have an idea that other professionals that would be listening to this may have come to that conclusion also. Could you dwell on that just a bit and tell us more?
Yeah, especially when I was, you know, thinking about my career, and I thought, you know, I kind of had that set. I'm a ambitious person. So, you know, I pursued, you know, just going to the military, pursuing college, those were always big challenges, and I love challenges. And so I thought, oh, I can do this vet school thing, right? I'm smart, and I care about animals, and that's kind of all I need. But that is not true. I think until you really get the opportunity to try something, to participate in something, you're really not sure of the details, right? I think it's one of the things I learned about just educating myself in a different way before I say I'm all in or I change directions, right? And when I initially kind of stepped away from that veterinary side that I thought was my dream job, I thought, oh my God, I just spent 4 years studying this, right? And now what am I going to do? And I was, you know, really nervous and unsure about what was next. And I think for me, that carried forward with me. I actually tell my children this all the time, right? Like, you have to learn a little bit more before you know what you really want to do. And I do that in everything now. You know, even if something sounds great, yes, I want to do that. I try to learn a little bit. I also try to ask other people's perspectives. So if I go back to that example at the vet clinic, if I would have done my internship, not my senior year, but maybe my sophomore year, maybe I would have picked something completely different, right? But I would have had a little more time to adjust. And I think that's also an important lesson, right? Is give yourself a little bit of runway. You know, trying to make last minute decisions without all that information can sometimes lead to maybe an undesirable event or even an undesirable goal for you. So I try to learn that lesson and kind of carry that forward in everything that I do.
Allison, sometimes when people start into safety, they've learned a lot of the regulations, they learned a lot of the guidelines, and they all of a sudden hit a wall. Because all these people don't have the same excitement and the rigor that they have seen as they learn. Did you encounter anything like that as you first started?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in fact, I think because I started on the environmental side, right, I had this notion of regulations and compliance, and we'll just tell people what to do and then they will do these things, right? It's so simple. And, you know, it wasn't until I was with Alcoa that I kind of bridged over to the safety side. And I remember it's exactly what I thought was the safety stuff has to be easy, right? It's like literally just telling people don't do this or do this, right? Really simple things. You know, environmental was very complex. And this is kind of my thinking when I'm, you know, of course, younger in my career. And it was the exact opposite, right? It was completely incorrect with that assumption. And I remember thinking, oh, all those safety people, I would give them a hard time about, right? This is easy. Just tell them to do this or to not do this. And it's just not that simple, right? Human beings are so complex. And I love to say they're messy, right? But we're fantastically messy. And it's not just about telling them what to do or telling them not what to do, right? It's about, you know, understanding everything around them. You know, people bring with them themselves, right? So when people come to work, it's just not that simple. You can't just tell people what to do or tell people not to do something. You have to really learn about what motivates them, right? You know, how can I make their work easier, less complex? Safety isn't just an on and off button, right? It's full of complexity. And that was a big lesson for me. And I really enjoyed that. And I think one of the things that really got me excited about the S side in EHS was when Alcoa really started down the road of human and organizational performance. We called it human performance at the time. And it was so interesting for me to learn more about, you know, the way that the brain works and the way that, you know, we need to not only influence or, you know, work with people, but that, you know, people are emotional beings. And so you can't just treat people like robots. It's just not that simple. And so that was kind of like my first, I think, time that I thought, I really love this, right? I mean, it was like, I love the EHS side. I love this complexity side of safety and how humans work. And I've worked that into literally every company I've ever been a part of, because I think it's the key to success with safety.
Allison, Dale Carnegie said, we'd like to believe that we're working with creatures of logic. We are working with creatures of emotions. And when we keep that in mind, I believe something you really hit there, as I heard you, we are working with individuals and human beings who need us to connect with them, need us to interact with them and influence them. We need the safety professional to be a human being expert, not just a regulation expert.
Allison, we definitely want to pull on the thread of human and organizational performance, HOP, and certainly building in capacity. I want to pull on that. But before we get there, there's one thing that I want to touch on, and it's related to the complexity of each of us as human beings. I remember Dr. Todd Conkling sharing a story, and he was having a conversation at Los Alamos with a nuclear physicist. And the nuclear physicist said some version of, you know, nuclear physics would be really simple, Todd, if it weren't for the people.
All those people, Jason, those people.
And I'll never forget that, because everything you're saying, we're complex. We make different decisions. We have, all of us have various motives. We're emotional, moral versus logical creatures, all of these different things, which leads me to, you said, Allison, I love challenges. You said that earlier on. And what I want to understand from your perspective is, how do you view challenges not as an obstacle, but as an opportunity? And then how do you work to overcome those challenges?
Yeah, great question. I think, I feel like that's just kind of built within me from when I was young, right? Great example. Like, I joined the Marine Corps. Who does that, right? I mean, just, you know, I got to look at all the services and I was like, let me pick that really hard one and go through 4 years in the Corps. And I think challenges are the best educational opportunity for people. They help you grow. They help you learn. They also really teach you great skill sets like patience and perseverance, and the ability to influence, the ability to work as a team, teamwork. I remember from my Marine Corps days, one of the things they loved to do, I hated it at the time, right? But now that I'm older, I appreciate it. They would make us do these team kind of, I'll say a building activity, but it was like, you know, some little, you know, mission or something. And they would ask us to work as a team when we were sleep deprived, right? We would get barely any sleep. They would wake us up and then they would say, go and conquer this objective. And you have to work as a team. Well, I think everybody knows when you don't have a good amount of sleep, you are not a happy camper, right? You are super grumpy. And the last thing you want to do is work as a team because you just want to finish what you're doing and move along and go to sleep or whatever that is. And one of those kind of just scenarios that I really remember, we were getting really frustrated with each other working on this obstacle. And I remember the drill sergeant coming over and saying, you will not move forward until you work together as a team. You can be here for hours. We have all day. And I thought, oh my goodness, we better overcome this challenge, right? And so I think as you kind of think about challenges in life, whatever they may be, right? As you get older, your challenges are different. You know, for me, I just came to Applied Materials a little less than a year ago. Coming to a new organization is a challenge personally, right? Learning the organization, understanding, you know, how can I help the company get to where it wants to be for safety? And so for me, I pull on some of those things like patience and perseverance and teamwork and stakeholders and surrounding myself with people, you know, that give me their thoughts. I ask for opinions, even if I say, I've done this before, I know how to do this, right? For example, you know, I've worked with HOP for many years. I feel comfortable with the content. But when I'm in a new organization, I need to learn more about the organization and the people before I just run into that full speed. And so I think for me, one of the kind of best lessons is patience, but also perseverance. So when I run into challenges, even if, you know, I'm trying to work, you know, towards something and the answer is, well, maybe not now, or right, maybe you're getting, you know, a little bit of mixed signals. I always say, okay, how do we adjust so we still work towards success? I think that's what's important. You have to have a goal in mind and your road to that goal may not be as straight as you hoped it would be. It may be full of curves and U-turns and all sorts of setbacks, right? But you're still working towards that goal and you're persevering. And I think the best way for people to do that is with a group of people, not by yourself. You have to surround yourself with people that enable that.
When it comes to patience and perseverance and teamwork, I believe things like integrating and executing mm-hmm. on human and organizational performance in a large manufacturing company, which you've done multiple different times, requires patience, perseverance, and teamwork,
yeah,
amongst many other things. So tell us a little bit about how you have viewed human and organizational performance, HOP, and then how you've integrated it, and then any challenges that maybe you've faced in implementing something that's likely new and different to a lot of these organizations, which reminds me of change management, which I'm sure you've had to do a lot of. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, you know, my first introduction to that was human performance was at Alcoa. And for those of you that know the story of Alcoa, right, Alcoa is very much a safety focused company. It goes back to their CEO many years ago, Paul O'Neill, that really said, we're going to do something different. We're prioritizing safety. And by the way, we'll still make money. And I think everybody thought, no, they're not. Oh my gosh, what is this guy doing? Right. But he was very successful. And I think for me, that legacy was so important because what it pointed out was if you care about your people, I mean, really care about your people. So you're designing systems the right way, you're engaging, you're having conversations. People want to work there. They want to do a good job, right? They want to stay there. They want the company to be successful. They are all in with you if they feel that, I'll say love, right? But just respect and care for them as an employee. And I give kudos to Rob Fisher for this, because he was our guy at Alcoa in the very beginning. And he really taught us, you got to care about people in a different way. And you've got to recognize that people are going to mess up. It's just going to happen. There's no way for you to stop this from happening every single day. And so why don't you prepare for that? Prepare for mistakes. And that was a totally different philosophy for us. And I think when I first heard it, right, with Rob, I thought, oh my gosh, this is so great. I love it. Oh my gosh, I don't want to teach this. This is so overwhelming. I'm not going to be good at this. You know, I think somebody needs to have a PhD in like psychology. This is too difficult. And I remember feeling really nervous about that. And we spent a lot of time, Rob spent a lot of time with Alcoa. And then our organization just really fostered that. And eventually I got more and more and more comfortable. And of course, human performance has evolved now for many years, right? Because this is many years ago that we did this at Alcoa. And I think I've seen it done in multiple ways. And I've learned a lot from people along the way about there's different ways you can do this, right? So, you know, Alcoa, we were very structured. We started with this training, and then you were going to do this program. And then we had these metrics, right? And then most recently at another organization, we started totally different. We taught people the concepts of human and organizational performance, but then we started with learning teams first. The principles of HOP are great, learning teams awesome, but sometimes you have to mix up the order and what you want or the way you want to do that at an organization, depending on their culture, you know, their maturity, their support systems. And so for me over time, I've kind of learned to learn more about my organization before I just jump into HOP, because it needs to land for them in a way that resonates and makes sense for them and is aligned with their values and their goals and their mission. And so for me, that kind of perseverance and patience in the beginning, I take the time to learn. I've been with Applied Materials almost a year. I'm still learning. It's a very complex company, but amazing people. And they, we've started to kind of plant the seeds now of human and organizational performance. And the reception is awesome. Like, they are so interested, kind of like me when I first heard about it, right? They're like, oh my gosh. I had somebody tell me the other day, somebody said you made safety fun. I'm like, I know, it can be fun, right? I think that for me, that was like the best feedback ever, right? Because nobody says, let's go listen to this lady talk for safety about 8 hours. That does not sound fun.
Ooh,
and yeah. And it was, and I credit HOP to making that very interesting for people to really have a connection with safety in a different way.
Allison, you know, several things you've said there that I think are so vital for people as they're listening. Safety does not have to be a cookie cutter, just like everybody else, like other organizations. We draw from great ideas, we draw from great principles, and then we look at our own personalities and abilities and find ways to adjust and weave those in. It doesn't have to be just like everybody else. You really were weaving in some Carnegie principles there about interacting with people. For example, the fourth principle out of 30 from Dale Carnegie, become genuinely interested in other people. And another one, talk in terms of other people's, other person's interest and about them. Tell us a little bit about how you saw some of that take place to where you would take some time or you'd encourage others to interact with their employees. And again, you said ask questions. Don't just give direct orders, but there's a lot of interaction there. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, I had this great opportunity at Applied Materials just a couple of months ago to go through a leadership course with University of Berkeley. And it was really focused around inclusion and a culture of inclusion. And as the instructors were talking, I kept saying, hey, this is HOP. Hey, this is all HOP, right? For me, that connection with human and organizational performance and what we learn about interacting with people was so tightly connected with creating a culture of inclusion for your employees that I told the instructors, hey, can I tell you more about HOP? And can we work together on a message? So when I'm talking about HOP from the lens of safety and you're talking about inclusion, the messages are the same, because in order for HOP to be successful, in order for you to learn from events, you better have inclusion, right? You have to have a culture of inclusion, because if your employees say, hey, there's no way I'm going in that room and telling you about my job, right? This didn't work out for me last time, or I feel nervous, or I'm not sure I should share these details, you really will miss out on an opportunity to learn more about where you could have risk or weaknesses in your system. And I think when people are comfortable, they share. And that is where we make connections with people. Not only do you learn more about themselves personally, that you can relate to them, that you can resonate with them, but you also learn more about the job and the job that they are doing and really how they feel about that. And those connections, right, those personal connections, they're very important for us to understand what really happens at work. And you have to pull out that personal side. You can't not have those relationships with your employees. You have to get to know them. You have to create a culture of inclusion so they feel comfortable talking to you. And so for me, like at Applied, I was so excited. I thought, oh my goodness, this is totally going to help me with my rollout of HOP, right? Because we already have this great mechanism for talking about inclusion. And now I see this coming together really nicely and involving other functions, which, as you know, when you're trying to implement something, the more support you have, the faster your success will be.
Allison, in the 30 principles that Carnegie had, in at least half of them, the two-word phrase, other person, shows up. Make the other person happy about doing the thing you suggest. Try honestly see things from the other person's point of view and over, and it's implied in all of them. So his principles, along with those things you've said, weave together, because it's this focus on, we as a safety professional, yes, we have to know the regulations. Yes, we have to know the guidelines. If we overlook the people, if we overlook the other people around us, we'll miss the boat. And
that's
it leaves out a dynamic.
Great comments, Merlin. Allison, I want to pull on the inclusion piece, and I so appreciate you bringing this up and then connecting the dots between inclusion and HOP, because you're right on, it's like a hand in a glove. You know, I just jotted down, inclusion leads to transparency, and transparency leads to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And trust is the foundation of every high performing team and every high performer organization on the planet. And it's something that a gentleman named Clive Lloyd says. He's a psychologist who's now transitioned into safety. He says, you can't fix a secret.
That's right.
And when you have trust in your operations, the workers, I would imagine, right, are much more open about, hey, Allison, there's this thing on second or third shift. I haven't told anybody before. I got to tell you, we kind of do this thing that we're not supposed to do. How do you respond to something like that? Because now you've cultivated an environment of trust and they're handing you the ball to kind of test you and challenge you. How do you handle something like that?
So I love the words like, tell me more, right? Because it's an easy way to just learn a little bit more and to also not have a reaction that could shut somebody down, right? So when we, especially in safety, when we hear news, like let's say, for instance, in your example, Jason, right? Somebody's doing something and they say, I don't know, I think I'm not supposed to do that. So first of all, that they had the courage to say that is fantastic. And so I don't want to initially lead to say, you're right, you shouldn't do that, right? That will not go well. So I usually, you know, I'll say, well, tell me more, right? Because who says you shouldn't do that? Is it a rule? Is it your procedure, right? So learning more about who says and why is really important. And when you kind of open up that door and say, hey, well, just tell me more about that, and we can work together without kind of that initial reaction of, you know, maybe disappointment or you're right, you shouldn't, you know, be doing that. So lead with curiosity, even if what you just heard inside of you, you're feeling scared or nervous, right? You know, I've had employees in the past that have told me things and inside I'm just dying. I'm like, oh my goodness, right? This is so dangerous what this person is telling me. And I have to control myself, right? And I have to say, okay, well, hey, tell me more about that. Because when they see that reaction of shock on your face, right? It's like if you have children and they know they're caught, right? They're all of a sudden they're not talking anymore. And so I want them to be open with that. And so tell me more. That's my, that I think that's super easy, you know, to add in there. And then I think it's important to, you know, what you learn is, okay, well, let's figure out what we need to do with this. Because first of all, if there's a rule and the rule's there for a reason, we need to understand what the rule's about so they know why they're working within that rule, right? There's a lot of safety regulations. There's a lot of environmental regulations. And, you know, it's not like we go out and teach all of, you know, our employees every single rule and law, and then they're well-versed, so they know why. They have no idea, right? It's just the safety person saying, by the way, there's a rule, and I have to have a guard there. And they say, well, okay, but now I can't PM my machine, and what do you want me to do with this, right? So you really have to open up the door to learn why, you know, what's going on. And then I think once you learn a little bit more about that, if you can take that feedback and change something to make their job easier, faster, right? Because people work towards efficiency. I don't care what you're doing, what your task is, you're working towards efficiency. They will be so happy to partner with you, and then they'll come back to tell you more. Right. So the way that you respond will dictate what you get in the future. If I respond in a negative way, I'm probably not going to get much in the future. If I'm positive, I'm wanting to learn a little bit more, then I'm going to get more. It's almost like innovation, right? When you're asking somebody to innovate, they are going to fail. There's going to be failures, but you also need to learn, well, why did it fail? What else do we need to do? And then you fix and improve. It's the same thing with safety. What went wrong? What do you think is wrong? Okay, how do we fix that? How do we get better? How do we make that easier? And I think opening the door for that is really important, right? What's the real stuff? What's the real work? And that's what you have to figure out.
You mentioned, and you said this, lead with curiosity. And so if you're a note taker, if you're driving right now, pull over and write this down. So she said, you said, tell me more about 10 times. I think three of the most important phrases as a safety and health professional, whether entry level or senior exec like yourself, tell me more, say more, what else?
Mm-hmm.
It's like Columbo at the end of every episode. Just one more thing. Just one more thing. What else? And you're right. It's leading with that curiosity. I want to transition briefly into learning teams. And then Merle and I want to hear about, so you've been a senior leader at multiple different very successful companies, not just on the EHS perspective, but on a business perspective. So we want to hear some of the challenges you've faced in going from company and climbing the ladder and leaving companies better than you found them. But before we get there, I just want to touch on learning teams because it's such a critical concept and it's simple, but a lot of people are overstepping the value. I'll just frame it with this. I won't say whether it was Ford or GM. I'll just say it was Ford or GM. And there was a gentleman that worked there for 40 years. And in his retirement speech, he was recognizing and appreciating the company. And he said, you had my body for 40 years and I gave you everything that my body had. But you also had my mind and you chose not to leverage it. Learning teams leverage, yes, our workers' physical bodies and what they bring to the table, but more importantly, their minds, because you said it, those that are closest to the work understand the work better than anybody. And the only way to understand the work is to talk more with our workforce rather than less. So tell us again a little bit about learning teams and why you found them to be so valuable.
Okay. And I love learning teams. I also think, right, safety in general has become or can become complicated, right? Like, oh my gosh, risk assessments and pyramids and, you know, all these other, you know, prioritizations, you know, calculations. I think sometimes we make it really difficult. And I think learning teams are very simple. And I think that's why they're so impactful. I think that's why they resonate with the workforce and why leaders understand it. And they're also very much geared towards results. So let me talk just a little bit more about that. So, right, let's say you have an incident, something goes wrong, it's pretty significant. You could even have a success, right? You could have this great, like, hey, we just set this production record. we're not really sure exactly how we did it, but we did it, right? And so it's really just, I want to learn more about something. And in order to do that, first, I have to create the environment that people will share information. So you have to have that culture of inclusion. You have to have transparency or psychological safety. But then also, I've got to bring in the people that understand the work and that actually do the work. And that means they do the work now, not that they did the work 25 years ago. And the way that somebody runs a machine is not the same way they ran the machine 20 years ago, because the people are different. The way I work is different. Yes, they might be using the same piece of equipment. Yes, the process is generally the same, but they are not. The way that they think is not. The way that they work towards efficiencies are not the same. So you can't look to just your leadership to say, hey, you ran this machine 25 years ago. Tell me what I should do to fix this. And it's not that they don't know or don't understand. It's just that they're not currently doing it right now. So you have to bring in the people that are actually physically doing the work right now, right? You have to have that culture. And within those discussions of learning teams, you don't necessarily focus on the one thing that went wrong, right? It's kind of like, you know, hey, we're all here today because, you know, Joe messed up lockout, tag out, and everybody's like, thanks, Joe, right? So, you know, nobody wants to have kind of that message, right? It's, hey, you know, we did have an event, but we want to kind of step back from that. We want to look at the full system. And what we want to do is actually quite simple. I want to learn more about the way you work. I want to know, what are problems for you? What's working well? What's not working well? And in the end, do you know all that we're producing? We're just producing a list of what the problems are, and then we're going to fix those problems. And that's what learning teams does. It tells you where your problems are. And so, you know, then you leave a learning team session and you say, well, I have 10 problems. I thought I only needed to fix one, but I actually have 10. But in order for you to have safety with capacity, that means safety that has multiple layers of protection. So if something goes wrong, another protection pops up, right? Oh, I missed this one. I've got another protection that pops up. You better find all the problems. And that's what learning teams really do. I think it's so different than what I was traditionally taught in safety, which is root cause analysis. You're finding that silver bullet, and then you're moving on and you've solved everything. And it wasn't true. We still left system weaknesses in place that eventually popped up, and you had another event or a similar event. And learning teams, I think, helps us overcome that in a simple way that resonates with all of the workers, which is really important.
I think you nailed it, and you said it a few times, in a simple way, emphasis on simple. All right, and I think it was Donald Miller, the author, that said this. He said, clarity gives meaning, meaning gives direction, and direction gives purpose. And I think there's very few things in EHS, like you referenced, that are really clear, and the workers can relate to it. And they're like, well, that's simple. Well, it is simple. And so clarity gives meaning, meaning gives direction, direction gives purpose. And of course, we want our workers to have purpose in their work day to day. And then the other piece that's really key with learning teams is, you referenced Joe, we'll just use Joe. The focus is not on fixing Joe. The focus is on fixing the job so Joe can do the job safely. Fix the system, not just obsess over fixing Joe the worker, but get curious about how Joe does the job so we can make the job a little bit safer. Did I hear you correctly, Allison?
You know, the importance of, tell me about your work. Some workers have never been asked this question, which kind of in hindsight, you feel that's crazy, but it's absolutely true, right? We kind of tell them procedures and we tell them the rules, and then we say, hey, be safe out there, do a great job, right? But we don't really learn a lot about the way that they work. We don't ask them how their work is doing. Just, this is such a human thing. If you don't like something, guess what? You don't really want to do it. It's quite simple, right? So even in work, if there's a part of their job that they say, I hate this. Oh my God, this is so hard. Or I really don't like doing this. I try to give it to, you know, Dan or something, right? Because he's new and we can give him these jobs. Those are things that are ripe for improvement, because that is also where you may have an incident or an event. Because in general, when things are hard, or, you know, the people really don't like them, then they're avoiding them, right? They're trying to find other ways to work around it, just like you or I would do. in any other environment. Something we didn't like, we would try to switch that. And that's what people do at work. So it's really important to ask them those questions. What do you love about this? What do you hate about this? And in that discussion, you'll learn where there's weaknesses and then where you need to shore up your, whether your safety or other kind of types of system improvements.
Yeah, it reminds me of the four D's of HOP, right? What's the dumbest thing we ask you to do? What's different than it was yesterday? What's dangerous? What's the most dangerous thing you're going to do? And then what's the most difficult thing you're going to do? And we don't have to wait till we have learning teams. We can ask our workers those questions today to get really curious about what's driving that. Lastly, I want to hand this to Merle, and I'm just going to frame it up with this. Marine Corps, EPA, Tetra Tech, Alcoa, Pentair, L3, WestRock, Applied Materials, and consistently grown in your influence, consistently grown in your leadership throughout that journey within your career. How have you navigated that, and how have you continued, because I've seen it, leaving companies better than you found them. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and then Merle, you can run with it as we close.
So I've had the privilege of working at really great companies and meeting awesome, great people, learning about different products, technologies, and also, you know, working with leaders and great leaders. And I think for me, that has helped me really grow. So anytime I would go to a new organization, it was educational for me, right? I feel like I'm just continuously learning. Even you know, though I'm, you know, I've moved up in my career, I've had, you know, great opportunities. I never stop learning because I don't know all the answers. And I think as a leader, you have to be really humble. So when I go to companies, I don't just say, hey, I'm Allison, I know EHS, I've been doing this for 15 years, everybody do, you know, what I say here. I learn more about the company. I learn more about the people. I learn more about the way that they operate, right? For example, Applied Materials, we've got a lot of engineers, right? We're very innovative. We're doing R&D work. Some of the smartest people on the planet are working here. They still care about safety. I want to know what that means to them. And I've got to spend time with leaders, and I've got to spend time with our teammates and understand more about what motivates them. And with that learning, I think that helps me grow as a leader. And every company is different. So you can't just say, you know, I'm doing this program exactly the way I did, let's say, in aerospace and defense. No, this company is different. I'm going to have to do something different. And I like to say, you've got to find what the organization's baby is, right? Like, what do they really care about? What motivates them? Some companies are motivated by safety, and that's the lens you use. Some companies, you know, maybe lean or operational excellence, and you can kind of dive into resiliency with that. You know, at Applied, we're focused on innovation, right? And what's better than, you know, learning more about safety and innovation than kind of creating these cultures of inclusion and failing safely? I mean, that's innovation every single day. And so you've got to resonate with the goals, the vision, the values of your company. And I think because I've worked at multiple companies, I had the opportunity to learn to do that in different ways. And that has made me just, I think, not only just more educated, right, but also more understanding about how you can be successful when you learn from others and take the time to learn. And that's really my approach. That's been my approach at Applied as well.
Allison, our time is about up, and we have had a fascinating time with your energy and your perspective. So I'm going to ask you to be thinking about a challenging word that you would give, if you could give one word to challenge, and for other safety professionals that are listening to this, what is a word that you would challenge them to do? I mean, we've heard you talk about curiosity. We've heard you talk about remembering that people are humans and that we have to be willing to make mistakes and adjust. If you could give one word of encouragement for folks to ponder, what would that be?
So I would say perseverance with kindness. So I think it's really important, especially in safety. You have to, like, right, safety is constant. You have to continually work at it. You have to message. You have to be talking about it all the time. I learned that from my days at Alcoa. I had an employee tell me once, you're going to safety us to death here. And I thought, that's hilarious, right? But what he was saying was, you guys are just hitting us all the time. And that really, for me, set the stage of communication and safety. It has to be in your face. It has to be currently happening. So perseverance, I think, is really important. Continue to beat the drum for safety, but do that with kindness. So do that with navigating, you know, the human condition, understanding people, leading with curiosity. I think that's so important. I would encourage people, if you don't know what to say, right? You say how. Ask people, show me how you did that, not why you did that or what you did, right? How. How will ask somebody to describe something? And that's really where you want them to be for learning. So I would say perseverance with kindness would be my two words. I know I picked two, not one, but.
Allison, we have benefit from your experiences that you shared with us. And that would be a great way as we sign off here for us to remember, persevere with the spirit of kindness to care. Thank you so much for giving your time to be an influencer as other people are facing their safety challenges.
Thank you.
What an episode, Merle. Allison Montgomery, Vice President, EHS Applied Materials. So many takeaways. A couple of my biggest, of course, what she closed with, persevere with kindness. Persevere with kindness and the power of driving and getting things done and delivering for our people and our organizations and doing so respectfully with kindness. And then the other piece, what's their baby? Not every organization in the world is in business to have and be safe. Let's just face it. Everyone has a different motive, generally speaking. And she asked that question, what's their baby? Is it safety? Is it lean and operational excellence, or is it innovation? And then how do we speak to their baby using their language in a way that they can understand it? What do you have, Merle?
Her wisdom on all these things you just mentioned. And even when she talked about someone who came to her and said, well, we might not be doing this right. She learned not to respond with shock, but she said, tell me more. Or another one is, help me understand. It's that idea that we don't act disillusioned that they'd have a problem, but we want them to keep coming back to us. And to all our listeners, thank you very much for being a part. This is how to approach your big safety challenge.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your hosts, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman and Jason Coons, Global EHS Team and Culture Activation Lead for 3M. Executive produced by Charlie Eltringham. Supervising producer and editing by Michael Escobedo. Directed by Michael Escobedo, Joel Bergai, and Giachi Liu. Graphics by Giachi Liu. Editorial support from Brandon Mohawk. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you would like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.